Welcome to Solder Smoke, a podcast by radio amateurs with a focus on homebrew electronics. From our workshops in Juneau, Alaska and London, England, we get together on the Echolink system to swap ideas about radio construction projects. Our website is www.soldersmoke.com. Please send feedback to soldersmoke, that's one word, at yahoo.com. So, as we step away from our soldering irons and oscilloscopes, please join us for another edition of Solder Smoke.
KL7R, KL7R, M0HBR, are you there, Mike?
Yeah, Bill, good to hear you this morning, M0HBR, KL7R. Lightly snowing here in Juneau, overcast. We did have a few holes in the clouds, but I didn't see any aurora during the solar blast we got here. HF is still out, 6 meters opened up for a little bit there, no aurora. M0HBR, KL7R.
Yeah, well, just as you mentioned, I turned off the light. It's still dark here. It's 0634 GMT on the 16th of December, 2006. That makes this Solder Smoke 44. And I can't see any stars out the window, so it's a safe bet that it's overcast over London. Although I can't complain, lately we've been pretty lucky. I've been seeing lots of Saturn and Titan. I think I mentioned that in the last show. But wow, yeah, a big solar blast, and it must be well, you've got plenty of darkness to to take advantage up there, Mike. It's I know we're in the we're approaching the shortest day. I think we're already at the earliest sunset. The earliest sunset comes a little bit prior to the shortest day, because you've got to consider the sunrise variable there too. I'm more focused on the sunset, and the earliest sunset that we get here in London is 3:50. That's 15:50 local time, and we're there now. We're at that point. So this is as early as the sunset gets here. When does what's it like there? I mean, you're considerably further north. So I guess it's just you must get sunset about, I guess, probably around 3:30 there. Is that right? Go ahead.
You know, I try not to pay attention to that because it's depressing. But, yeah, I do know when it gets around 7 or 8 at night, I'm thinking, man, it's time for bed because the sun's been down for hours. So I think you're right. I think it's down before I go home from work, so around 3:30. I noticed the sun came up directly down the Gastineau Channel, which is sort of southeast pointing, and in the middle of summer it comes up, you know, kind of in the northeast. It's quite a difference there where the sun rises. We got so many mountains here that our sunset actually happens about 1 p.m. at work. It's a little bit better out here where my house is. Better angle for evening sun. A little bit of snow, but not like it was there. I've been doing just a little bit of soldering. I wonder what's been going on in your bench there, Bill. Go ahead.
Well, the new soldering iron has arrived from our friends at Ocean State. The one that you recommended, the Elenco electronic soldering station, is here. I have not yet fired it up. I guess we mentioned this way back, that the first time you use a new telescope, it's referred to as first light. I guess we should coin a new phrase here. The first time you use a new soldering iron, it's first smoke. So I haven't done that yet, but that'll be done today. And it looks like it's going to be a major advance in the solder smoke generating capabilities here at M0HBR, because, the one that I've been using for years and years, it's just a little 35-watt, 40-watt iron with I guess it's a copper tip, but whatever kind of tip I have on there, it seems like it's just constantly melting away. I mean, I treat it kind of rough. I don't do all the right things that you're supposed to do with it, but it, I know it's far from modern, and it just chews up the tips quite a bit. And the tips that came with this thing look a whole lot more durable and modern. And it's got, I can actually control the temperature, and there's the necessary sponge pad there to keep it clean. So exciting times, Mike, and thanks for the recommendation, KL7R, M0HBR.
All right, first smoke. Well, you'll have to break out a glass of wine and get some cheese and crackers to go with your first blob there. You'll have to decide what would be an appropriate first blob. You wouldn't want to waste the moment. That's great, Bill. Let's see. Yeah, I've been doing a little bit. I found out my K1. You know, for some reason, I pulled out my K1 and started trying it out. And we had enough of an NUF here that I was going to try it on 20, and the thing had died on 20 meters, and could not figure out why. So, gave me a chance to tear into the K1, which I really like that radio. There's something nice about that radio, and did some tracing and finally found out it was something weird in the 4-band crystal board or 4-band filter board. And after some more fiddling around, I found out the 22 megahertz 20 meter crystal, local oscillator crystal, stopped working. And then looking on the Elecraft site, that's apparently a widespread problem. They must have got some bad 22 megahertz crystal. Anyway, Elecraft's going to send me two of them for free, which is awful nice. And was working on my that's put back together, waiting on crystals. And my K12 here from K1EL had a bug in the software, and so K1EL sent me a new chip to try out. And my bug got fixed, but he introduced another one, so he's going to send me another one. So I've been helping K1EL. Other than that, I got a few other items, but the one that really turned out to be interesting was, remember you were working with a Chebyshev low pass filter for your rig. You were designing a filter, and you had some problems with instability there, Bill.
Oh yes, how can I forget? The results are permanently etched on my thumb there in the form of it's almost like I have one of those college fraternity tattoos, except mine is in the shape of a Motorola transistor. it burned up my finger in the process of burning itself up. First off, three cheers for Elecraft. Three cheers for K1EL. Great. Yeah, it's a pleasure to deal with folks like that. And those crystals. I mean, crystals. You know, they can be finicky. And I've had I had one that I thought was bad, and it turned out it wasn't. And the folks at Jan Crystals, three cheers for Jan Crystals, by the way, also very nice folks, helped me out and pointed out that my the problems were at my end and not in the crystal manufacturing process. But yeah, tell me about the what happened with the you can pronounce it, so you must be far more expert at it than I am. I like it. It says Chebyshev. All right, sounds like something to do with a Chevrolet. But I told you I've over the years have had problems with low pass filters. I'd get the amplifier running just right, or so I thought. Then I'd put in the low pass filter, and it wouldn't run right. And but this article that I mentioned by Phil, WB7AEI, helped quite a bit. And the one I have now in the 17-meter rig is not giving me any problems at all. And I know that it's, I suspect that it's doing what it's supposed to do, because I did some before and after tests, and the SWR is a bit better with the thing in line, which is a sign that it is in fact knocking down some of the frequencies that should not should not be moving on to the antenna, KL7R, M0HBR.
Well, one thing, you know, when I was playing with that AADE, I'm glad your picture is working, by the way. I still need to fiddle a bit with mine. But I was playing with that AADE filter designer software, and it has, and I was playing with the crystal filter, which I made Butterworth, which is supposed to be a little smoother bandpass than Chebyshev. Anyway, one thing that surprised me was how much the design impedance changes with frequency with a crystal filter. It just wildly changes. You move just a few kilohertz, and the impedance to the crystal filter wildly changes. I guess it makes sense, but I figured, you know, well, I'm designing a 50 ohm filter. You know, it should be a 50 ohm filter. Well, that's not the case. If you move slightly in frequency, it can be, you know, way away from 50. It was suggested that I put a 6 dB pad on my filter. So anyway, I was thinking about your low pass filter, and I went and I remembered seeing something on W7ZOI's site. Under his links, if you look up W7ZOI in Google, under his links, the second to the last link has a thing on feedback and pads, and feedback amplifiers and pads. And I remember seeing the, you know, Smith chart and how, and he would put a random amount of you know, a random impedance and run it through a 6 dB pad through this random impedance and then back to the 6 dB pad. And I remember seeing the Smith chart, so I remember that visual part, but I didn't remember much else about the page. It turns out that if you put a 6 dB pad, the worst case return loss you can get is 12 dB, or twice the pad, you know, out and back return loss. So you could basically hitch up a short or an open to a 6 dB pad, and you'd only have, you know, you'd have a 12 dB return loss. I forget what that is, something like 1.7 to 1 or something. I forget what that is. Ignore that last thing. But anyway, I was looking on that page, and there was some other stuff on that page. It wasn't just about return loss. There was some stuff about, it wasn't just about pads and return loss. It was also about feedback amplifiers and return loss. And coincidentally, it was using the amplifier that we were using at figure 2.57 of experimental methods. And I was a bit surprised to see the reason that he was using the same amplifier that we have to be choosing, and there's a lot of really good stuff on that page. So I put a link to it from the Solder Smoke bookmarks link there, Bill. What do you think about that? M0HBR, KL7R.
Well, great. Yeah. The mention of return loss reminds me that we have to announce the posting of Mike's, I guess we could say, debut video. It's a video that describes, I guess we could call it an LT spice cast. We've been talking about this now for a few weeks, about the possibility of kind of integrating LT spice with video to demonstrate what we're doing. And I tried and made a couple of pathetic efforts to put up an LT SpiceCast video, and they usually ended up with very, very low resolution combined with very, very large file sizes, which, you know, I'm no expert, Mike, but I'm guessing that that's not what you're shooting for in the video game. But anyway, and this might be a sign that just as I should stick with analog and not mess with digital, this may be a sign that my future is in audio and not video. But your effort was a lot more successful, and I got a lot out of it. I'm going to go look at it again, and listeners can find this video on the Gadgeteer news page off my website, www.gadgeteer.us. There are links from the solder smoke page, and there you'll find the link to Mike's video. He managed to get the thing in at a very svelte 2.5 megs, and it downloads quite easily. The resolution on his video is quite good, although you won't see his smiling face in there, and I know that's gonna disappoint some fans out there. But his voice is there, and you can see what's happening on the LT Spice screen, and I think it's quite educational. It's a good way of doing it. I'm going to continue to experiment with mine a little bit to see if the program that I'm using can be made useful. Mike is using a program called Wink, and I was using another one. I don't have the name of the program here right now, but I'll experiment with mine a little bit. I think this has real potential. It's a great way to sort of demonstrate what you're doing. A picture's worth 1,000 words, and I guess a video's worth about 1,000,000. But that was really cool. If anybody goes and takes a look at Mike's return loss experiment video, just remember that occasionally you have to click on the little wink play icon that pops up, and it worked out real well. But I thought that was cool, Mike, and I got a lot out of it, and also got a lot out of the email that we got from Wes on there about how to think about input and output impedance. I wonder, you know, this is getting a little bit down in the weeds, but when you on the simulations, or when you're calculating when you're calculating output impedance, and you know, you essentially what you're doing is you're looking back in to the amplifier through the output port. I imagine it's got to make a big difference on about whether you have the amplifier powered up or not. I wonder when you're playing with LT Spice, if you could do a little experiment and sort of take a look at the output impedance with VCC connected to the amplifier, and then with the thing powered down. I wonder if you get a difference. I imagine you should. KL7R. M0HBR.
Well, I used Wink. Took me a while to figure out how to run it. Wink generates shockwave flash video, and it basically goes and takes screenshots anytime you press a mouse click or type a character on the keyboard, and it takes a screenshot. So it's going through taking 50 or 100 screenshots rather than a screenshot every 200 or 20 a second, so it's a lot less data there. And anyway, the trick I found with Wink is go through and do all the clicking you're going to do in the application, and save screenshots, and then go back with Wink and then add audio to the different screens, and that worked out really well. I had a problem before when I tried to record the audio during the initial run, and that just did not work at all, and I almost gave up on Wink because of it. But if you do the audio after, it works great. And as far as those green buttons, I put them in there myself. That's not a Wink auto-generated thing. I put them in there basically as a convenient stopping point. So after discussing an amp, there'll be a green continue button arrow, so that you can maybe review what was going on there. You could also, I didn't do it, you can also go back to the beginning or review a section. I mean, there's a lot you can do with Wink and the flash. I'm sure people are going to find major errors in what I was saying there, but I tried to keep it kind of generic. I'm sure there's one place where I'm going to get nailed. Referring to feedback components of the emitter resistor and the base collector resistor, I said those components completely determine the input impedance, output impedance, and gain of the amp. And probably completely was too strong a word, so I apologize ahead of time. let's see. As far as making up VCC, I never tried that in Spice, but I tried it in for real. I hitched up, I built that 2.57 amp for real, and I hitched up return loss bridge on the input and measured input return loss, and then I wired it up to the output gingerly, and very careful to make sure the amp wasn't oscillating, so that I didn't blow up my sig gen or my power meter, and pumped power into the output of the real amp with the real return loss bridge, and a real sig gen and a real power meter, and when I did it with the amplifier off, I got a much different reading for return loss than I had for when I had the amplifier on. As a matter of fact, I was incorrectly initially using that as the value of return loss, the difference between the amplifier on and the amplifier off. And that was a mistake. That was corrected. But basically, yeah, you can see when the amp's on and when the amp's off. You can see also if you forget to, or if you intentionally remove the 50 ohm load at the input, you need to terminate, if you're going to measure a reverse return loss, or output return loss, you need to terminate the input with a 50 ohm resistor, sort of like an output dummy load, but it's at the input of the amp. But anyway, if you take that resistor off and back on again, you can see changes, large changes in return loss. So I don't know how it works, but it does. And I found it pretty interesting and amazing, actually. M0HBR, KL7R.
Yeah, KL7R, M0HBR. It is real interesting, and it's a help in trying to, for me anyway, improve my understanding of sort of the design parameters with an amplifier. It's amazing how much you have to think about with a simple, you know, so-called simple common emitter amplifier. You know, we look at them and we look at dozens of them in each schematic we look at, but once you start really digging into it and trying to understand how the components are selected and all the different factors that have to be considered in designing that one little amplifier, you get a sense of the complexity of the task that faced by the engineer. So that's been fun. LT Spice has been a real help. I've come to really like it. There is a bit of a learning curve on it, like there is with any bit of new software, but it's not that steep. And I played with previous versions of Spice, and wow, I think LT Spice is just a lot better. On the output impedance, when the thing's on or off, I guess it would also be interesting to see whether return loss and output impedance varies depending upon whether you're whether there's a signal going, especially if it's Class C amp. You know, if it's a Class C amp and the thing is essentially key up and you're not providing an input signal, the transistor is just sitting there, it's not conducting. I mean, there's you know, the voltage is on the collector, but there's no real significant current going through the transistor. That's the whole idea. And I wonder if you'd see a difference in return loss and output impedance key up versus key down, especially with a Class C amp. I'm not sure it would make much difference. It probably wouldn't make as much difference if you were dealing with a Class A amp, which is conducting all the time. But anyway, obviously these are the kind of things I need to think about a little bit more, and I need to spend more time with your Wink video. Well, you know, talk about software, though. That Wink, I didn't realize that what was going on with Wink, and that's very smart. That's really a very ingenious way of doing it. I was looking at the two different video files that our experiments produced. I was sitting there, and I was saying, looking at yours, and the resolution on yours was much better than on mine. and mine was at 30 megs, and yours was at 2.5. And I kept thinking to myself, how did he do that? Obviously, I'm doing something significantly wrong, but I can see it now. Yeah, sure. I mean, if you just got LT Spice up there on the screen, there's no sense in, and there's nothing happening, and you haven't moved the cursor, and you haven't moved the, you haven't changed anything. There's no sense in, you know, generating an endless stream of video shots of the same thing. So, and I guess that's where the name comes from, Wink, appropriately named. So, wow, that's good. I think this might be the way forward for the worldwide LT Spice video casting community. I noticed that these kind of videos get significantly fewer hits on YouTube than others. Even within the ham radio realm, I put up that video about my 20-meter homebrew transceiver, the DSB rig. And I've been surprised. That thing has got about 3,000 views. And it was viewed quite a bit even after I first put it up. But the video with 20 meter homebrew double sideband rig was a big hit. But I guess the subject line for the new video was a bit too geeky even for the ham radio YouTube community. It was something like effective saturation on Class C amplifier efficiency. I mean, you got to be pretty hardcore to say, yeah, that's the video I want to watch, especially when there's so much competition there on YouTube. So, if my video, the effect of class of effective saturation on Class C amplifier efficiency, has gotten only about 50 views. But hey, thanks to all of you who did take the time to download it and look at it. I guess we'll have to jazz up our subject lines on future LT Spice casts, Mike. KL7R, M0HBR.
It's amazing anybody looked at it at all there, Bill. Must be some hardcore experimenters out there that would be interested in that. As far as measuring the output return loss while the amplifier is keyed up and oscillating, I don't understand that well enough to even try it. I would imagine that an oscillating amplifier putting out, say, 5 watts, connected to a return loss bridge with great big resistors, the return loss bridge may survive, but I'm not sure your SIGGEN attached to the output of the return loss bridge, which generates 100 milliwatts, maybe not even 100 milliwatts, say 0 dBm, I'm not sure that at 1 milliwatt, I'm not sure that SIGGEN would survive. That's the part that scares me, is hitching up your SIGGEN and your return loss bridge directly to the output of a transmitting amplifier. As long as the amplifier is quiet and not putting out, you know, much or any, I wasn't too scared about hitching up my SIGGEN to the output of my amp. But the case where you're doing a Class C test and you need the thing to be on and conducting to determine what the output impedance is, I mean, you're basically saying that the output impedance changes with drive. I don't know enough to even know if that's a true statement, but it'd be fun to experiment with. You'd have to do it at pretty low levels, low enough that your SIGGEN could sink whatever power was coming at it. I'd be a little nervous about it. I don't know what would actually happen up there. Bill, M0HBR, KL7R.
Yeah, this might be one of those things where we say, don't try this at home. or try this only in LT Spice. And yeah, well, I have to think about this some more. It's interesting question. It does. I guess this is the kind of thing that you'd want to play with in LT Spice and not on the actual workbench with real test equipment. It also made me think, and I think it was an email from Wes that that started me thinking along those lines. Perhaps the designers of LT Spice could incorporate some new features that would make it even more realistic, like maybe they, when you hit the run command, if you've committed a major error and you're going to burn up the transistor and the resistor, the LC Spice should display, you know, smoke coming from the appropriate point on the schematic, flames coming out of the power supply or something like that. that would be really realistic. We could go on with that. Well, great, but they're good about Wink, and I do suggest folks go and take a look at it, even if it is getting into the into the geekier areas of of what we're discussing. I really liked your Wink video. I guess I'm going to switch over to Wink. I think that might be the way to go with LT Spice. What else? A couple things I just wanted to mention, Mike. I posted on the Gadgeteer News website a very interesting email from Rick on minimalist radio, and that combined with the book that I told you guys about, Gonzo Gizmos, has caused me to start thinking about crystal radios again. And my kids are at the point where I think they would have some fun building the crystal radio. I guess Wozniak is part of this. In his book, IWAS, he talks about the importance of a crystal radio project that he did when he was, I guess, about my son's age. And it's all coming together, you know, because when I ordered a new soldering station, I threw in orders for a few parts, a few needed RF chokes and things like that, and germanium diodes. So I've got some germanium diodes in there, and it's always a bit easier to get the crystal radio running with one of those diodes as opposed to the Galena and Cat Whiskers approach. I think the Galena and Cat Whiskers approach is more praiseworthy. It's the real, you really get the sense of ancient radio and making your own, you know, PN junction and probing around on the rock for what they used to call the sweet spot. We'll do that, but to get started, I think we're going to go the easy way and start out with the germanium diodes, which, by the way, sounds to me somehow like dilithium crystals, germanium diodes. But we have we have the devices now, and I suspect that sometime over the weekend or perhaps over the long Christmas weekend, my kids and I will be building crystal radios. I have the high impedance headphones. I have an old contact lens solution bottle, which Gonzo Gizmos recommends as a good crystal radio coil former. So we'll report on this in a later edition of Solder Smoke, KL7R, M0HBR.
All right, Bill. Well, that segues nicely into another thing I wanted to talk about. I wanted to finish up one item about return loss. I added a techniques button on my website there, KL7R, ham-radio.ch. And under there is some stuff I did on return loss on real measurements and stuff like that. So there's a couple links in there. Anyway, that's under techniques. But one thing I wanted to mention, in addition to having gratitude for the guys that make LT Spice, is I wanted to mention what a good job the guys at QST are doing with QST. I had given up on QST. No political thing going on there. I just wasn't getting much out of the QST magazine. The January 2007, I just re-upped mostly because I like being able to get at the stuff on the ARRL website. It's some really good stuff on the AWRL website, and that's worth the $40 a year just to get there. But the QSQ Mag, they did a good job. It used to be just full of contesting stuff and you know, stuff I didn't find particularly interesting. But the January 2007, coincidentally, has a high performance passive receiver, like what you're doing, a zero voltage threshold MOSFET, high sensitivity crystal set. That's one of the articles in there. It's N7FKI. A pretty interesting article on how to build a passive receiver like a 1N34A. And there's two other items in there on crystal set radios. There's an evaluation on Elmer crystal radio receiver kit review, and then there's also a pointer to the Crystal Set Society on their crystal radio kit, a couple of kits and a design on crystal radio. So a bunch of other good stuff in there. I just want to, you know, you always give people a hard time when they're not doing right. I want to give these people a good time because they're doing what they ought to be doing there. So way to go, QFC. M0HBR, KL7R.
Yes, KL7R, M0HBR. Yes, three cheers for QST, too. Great. Well, January hasn't arrived here yet, but the December issue was quite good also. There was Rick Campbell's article on the Micro T2, a compact single-band SSB transmitter, that I thought was really interesting. I think I mentioned that. I was reading that on the double-decker London bus a while back, and I always like the QST Workbench segment. Doctor has always got some good info. And three cheers to H. Ward Silver, N0AX, for the hands-on radio column. Always interesting, always good. And I like one of the latest editions. I always get a lot out of it. Eclectic Technology by Steve Ford. Always good stuff in there. And it, you know, just all the kind of integrating some of the strange new technology that's coming out with ham radio, and that's a lot of fun. So yeah, I mean, QST takes a lot of hits, but sometimes yes, three cheers for QST. They do a great job, and I always enjoy the arrival of that magazine. It's one of those things where, you know, yeah, I can remember the first time I found QST as a kid. Yeah. And you know, I think all of us have big piles of them around the house, and we keep them because they're good. If they weren't good, they'd be in the bin. But we keep them. So three cheers for QST. Let's see a couple other things. Let's see. Speaking of eclectic technology, I was in a store here doing a little bit of Christmas shopping yesterday. And I see they have, and these things were just made street legal here in the UK. These little FM transmitters that hook up to the iPods and the MP3 players. I'm sure they've been around in the States for a long time, but they were just legalized here, and it just caught my radio amateur's attention. And so I just thought that was pretty cool. And there's got to be a lot of applications for this kind of thing. You know, you just plug it into the output of the MP3 player, and you can listen to the thing over the car radio or the home stereo system. So I think we might get a few of those in this Christmas stockings here this year. That'd be fun. I just saw the AWRL letter, and they announced that some new ham radio satellites are going up. Some new products from the midshipment there at Annapolis, sort of in the PCSat series. And when I read that article, I found myself with the urge to dust off the TNC and the 2-meter equipment and see if I could get back into the PCSat mode. And finally, I've been reading an amazing article about the Antikytheria mechanism. This is the this device that they found while some guys were sponge diving off an island in Greece. It's 2,000 years old, It was made, it's a gear mechanism with more than 30 complicated gears involved. It's more complicated than many modern wristwatches, and they built this thing in Greece. Somebody built it over 2,000 years ago, and they've discovered that it's a mechanism for tracking the movement of the Earth, the Moon, and the Sun, and perhaps the visible planets in order to predict eclipses and things like that. So this is really amazing stuff, and I just stumbled upon it, and I think in the New Scientist, and I've been reading up on that. But anyway, back to the modern era, KL7R, M0HBR.
Well, you know, I was tracking you pretty well, but with that gear thing there, I forget what you were talking about before that, Bill. yeah, it's amazing work, you know, with water clocks and things like that to track the sun's motion and what all. Well, since I've lost track of what you were talking about, I wanted to finish my thought about QST. These guys are doing a good job, and I would like to encourage them, if they happen to hear us, to, you know, put a lot of articles on building weekend circuits, you know, something interesting, fun, something you learn from that you can build in a weekend, and you can fit on five pages, you know, something that's not too far out there, something that for the average ham, you know, the average ham isn't a multi contester, and you know, I see in this one that they you know, only have three or four pages on events and contesting, and that's good enough. So the back of the QST, continuing my review, is loaded with ads. Almost half the magazine is ads. That's probably the only thing I'd rail against, and not too badly at that. It saves me from having to wait for my MFJ catalog. I'll just look at the back of QST. But they're doing great stuff, and I just like to encourage them to keep it up. A lot of good stuff. Let's see, you mentioned something about regulation. Oh, yeah, that's what it was. You were talking about stats. I've never done packets. And from what I understand, to talk to the satellite, you need 9600 baud packet. 1200 won't work. Maybe clear me up on that. So, and not only do I not have a 1200 baud packet, I don't have a 9600 either. I just heard today that as of today, CW is no longer a requirement for U.S. ham to get your ham license. So you no longer have to have 5 word a minute code proficiency to be a U.S. ham. I don't know how long it's going to take to implement that, but the FCC put that out today. You know, I thought about what are my feelings with regard to this, and I actually it wasn't a bad feeling. It was like, well, the guys I'm going to be talking to at the bottom end of the ham bands are going to be people that want to be there. So it'll be a lot of experimenters and a lot of guys that like CW down there. So I think I'm winding down, Bill. My back. I don't know if it's the flu or old age or snow shoveling, but. But he decided to give out here, and so I think I'll not stay too much longer today. M0HBR, KL7R.
It's probably all of the above. that's always the case with me when I try to figure out what happened. All of the above. Well, yeah, and that you have to look on the bright side, Mike. That'll require you to stay in front of the workbench, you know, melting solder. Yeah, well, some of these sats will do 1200 baud, the standard TNC rate, and that's the case with the PC sats, and it's the case with the new ones that are going up, and it makes them a lot of fun. With just simple, I just use the regular old KPC3 TNC that I've had for years. It normally gathers dust in a box somewhere, but every once in a while when I get this urge for satellite communication, I pull it out. I hook it up to an old Radio Shack 2-meter handy talkie, and the computer, and with just a little coat hanger antenna out, when this thing, when this little little box flies overhead, the packets fly into my computer, and they have it linked up with the APRS system, and people are sending up position reporting packets. When I was out in the Azores, I had it set up so it would transmit up to the transmit my location up, and I had a little cooler. You could select the icon that will display on the screen for other users, and I had this little icon that showed the island with a palm tree sticking up. It wasn't really the kind of Azores kind of vegetation, although we did have some palm trees out there, but it conjured up the image of a small island. So I'll let you know. I might be getting some packets from space here, which would be a big change from my normal operating. I think we are winding down. I don't want to keep you there, but let me reach for the device here, and time for Solder Smoke Mailbag. That gong is very popular, by the way, and we get some complaints if we don't use the gong. So I'm hiding it from my kids during the week, and I have a place where I can stick it here in the shack where it won't disappear. So the gong is with us. Paul M1CNK sent a few nice messages and made recommendations for different bits of software, and he was talking about one particular antenna modeling program called Fornac 2. I think it's available, you can find it by Google, and I've never played with antenna modeling software. I guess I should, but Paul made recommendations there, and I know, Mike, that you had some thoughts about that also. Then we have a very nice email from an old friend, Jim, AL7RV, Alpha Lima 7, Radio Victor. I think Jim is an Alaskan who is stranded in Florida, in the Sunshine State, and he's a home brewer, and he's got a lot of experience, and he and I have been talking on Echolink over the years, and he is now taking Solder Smoke and retransmitting it on a local cable TV information network. So our program might be being listened to by folks who are doing it and listening to it through different technology, and that's great. We're really excited about that. We'll say hello to anybody on that network, on Jim's network, who might be listening, and welcome to the Solder Smoke community. I was interested that Jim said he thought that our transmissions were a bit too hi-fi. I've always been worrying that they're a bit too lo-fi, but he's going to do some processing on the shows to restrict the audio bandwidth and do some compression and stuff to make it sound more like real HF radio. So we'll be interested in that. We might sign Jim up as a technical consultant to help us make Solder Smoke sound more like 20 meter sideband, I guess. Edwin, WA4YHL, sent a nice email and said that Solder Smoke has prompted him to go out and buy experimental methods in RF design. Money well spent, Edwin, and congratulations. I'm sure you'll have a lot of luck with that and get a lot out of that great book. And finally, Brian, KG4ENB, writes to report that he's building a 17-meter rig, and he's looking at the VFO stage, and he wants recommendations on whether to go with a PTO or a variable cap VFO. And he also asks about the possibility of using a mixer VFO arrangement. I have had very bad luck with those kinds of arrangements because I always end up getting multiple frequencies coming out of the thing. I'm sure that people are very successful with these, but I have not been able to get those things to work, and I always find myself going back to simple sort of single frequency unsynthesized VFOs without without a lot of mixers and additional mixing going on there. So, Brian, good luck with that project and keep us posted. Back to you, Mike. KL7R, M0HBR.
All right, Bill. I forgot what I was going to say. I was just wondering, maybe we should skip next week, being as it's close to Christmas there. Why don't we just plan on skipping next week, and I'll catch you the next week and spend time with the families and what all there, Bill. What do you think about that? Over.
Okay. Yeah. A solder smoke Christmas break, we'll resume after the Christmas holiday, Mike. That's a good idea. So we'll wish everybody out there a very Merry Christmas, Happy Holidays, and enjoy it. And hope there are a lot of good solder smoke like gadgets under the Christmas trees. And we'll talk after Christmas. Have a good one, Mike. KL7R, M0HBR.
Yeah, best to you, Bill, and your family there. Yeah, enjoy it. KL7R.
Okay, Mike, yeah, 7-3, and Merry Christmas to everybody. KL7R and the big group, M0HBR.